This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in immersive, sustainable, small group travel experiences. Take yourself away from the world you know and be open, curious, fearless, and challenged. Be intrepid. Visit intrepidtravel.com to book your next trip today.
Just because we're not traveling now doesn't mean we don't like talking travel. This podcast was recorded in the days before social distancing, but we hope you enjoy it anyway.
It's the continent that has it all. You want ancient ruins, bustling cities, soaring mountains, vast jungles? South America has you covered. With so much to see and do, however, where do you start? That's the question we're tackling today as we try to define South America's don't miss destinations. Hello and welcome to Flight of Fancy, traveller.com.au's podcast. I'm Uta Juncker, and today I'm joined by two travellers who have climbed the highs and lived the lows of this dazzling continent. He's a filmmaker who resisted the obvious charms of Rio and instead made his home in Brazil's least loved city, Sao Paulo. Tim Shirodi, welcome.
Hello. I should have chosen Rio.
Life's all about choices. Rob McFarland is a travel writer who also has some sneaky salsa moves. Rob, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So one thing we all have in common is that we all adore Brazil, but I think each of us is in love with a slightly different destination. So Rob, you're a Rio man, aren't you?
I am, yes. I mean, I think part of that is because I haven't been to a lot of the other cities in Brazil, and so I haven't been to São Paulo, for example, or Salvador, but it'd be pretty hard to beat Rio. I mean, it is, I think it's genuinely up there with Sydney as one of the most picturesque, just sort of stunningly beautiful cities in the world in terms of its geography. And then it's also populated by, I would say, arguably the most attractive race of people on the planet. And so you have these two things that come together in a place where their priorities are having fun, going to the beach, work is this inconvenience that sort of they shuffled in between those two things. And I went there last year for the first time, if I'd gone there in my 20s or 30s, I would definitely still be living there.
Tim, you're also a fan, are you?
I am, yeah. I think Rio is just a stunningly beautiful city. And I think, I mean, I'm in love with Brazil in general and Brazilian culture, Brazilian music, Brazilian food, Brazilian people, the language. For me, I just think it's just, I don't know, you can't beat it. And very attractive people, not just in looks, but in attitude as well. And they're very welcoming. They're very fun. I've learned a bit of Portuguese while I was over there. So that just opens up another part of the culture as well. I lived in São Paulo though. I was like many expats following a girl over there. São Paulo has its charms for sure, but it's definitely nothing on Rio. São Paulo is a big, sprawling, quite a dangerous city, and it's got traffic like I could never imagine. I mean, the population of Greater São Paulo is 24 million. So it's like the whole population of Australia crammed into one city.
And the gridlock is incredible. I once went there for work and innocently had scheduled meetings like I normally schedule meetings. And my mobile phone died. I was 3 hours late to my first meeting. Right. I like walked in, burst into tears, was like, hey, I'm so sorry.
And they were
like,
just arrived anyway.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, no worries.
Yeah, that's Brazilian time. Yeah, Brazilian time. If you're going to a party in Brazil and they say 7 o'clock, they really mean any time between 10 and midnight.
Mm. So I've heard like the host doesn't even turn up. So no. If I say like the birthday's at 4, they won't get there till 6. Yeah. And you just be sitting around, you know, very English of me turning up exactly on time. Like, where is everyone?
Yeah, I made that mistake a few times.
But one of the things a lot of visitors don't realise is that between Rio and Sao Paulo, you have this beautiful coastline, right?
Yeah. And I think it often gets overlooked by travellers as well. They'll go to Rio, they'll go to São Paulo, they go to Foz do Iguaçu, and then they go down into Argentina. But not enough people explore this area in between Rio and São Paulo, and it's stunningly beautiful. You have amazing jungles. You've got these beautiful little towns, Ubatuba, islands like Ilhabela, Ilha Grande. You've got Paraty. You just have such beautiful little Brazilian villages nestled in there amongst the jungle and the palm trees. And it's kind of how you picture a little Brazilian paradise, I think.
And just things are very Brazilian in ways in Paraty, which is this beautiful little historic village on the coast, and it's gorgeous, except, you know, it floods every high tide because they just, I don't know, they haven't worked out yet that they could do something about that. So it's just like your hotel will go, yeah, no, it's high tide, just be careful, you know, wear your boots.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I'm a massive fan of that stretch of coastline. Like, I was living in Sao Paulo and living in a little apartment there, and for me, my escape route was this part of the coastline. I would just go down to the local bus stop and jump on a bus and head out to, I'd start in Matosinhos and then slowly make my way down to Ubatuba, and I'd spend a few days traveling up and down the coast, then come back to Sao Paulo and live there throughout the week. But for me, it was just like a little breath of fresh air, and it's just such a beautiful little part of the world.
It's so green, which I think a lot of people don't expect.
Yeah, one night I was staying in actually a friend's house. He'd built a house with his little family up above in the rainforest above Ubatuba, and he's built this house out of bamboo. I'm sleeping in the living room, and he's left all the windows open. He's got a, it's like nestled into the jungle. And late at night, these fireflies fly through the window, and you've got fireflies flying around this like bamboo hut up in the jungle. And it's
how magic.
It's magic, yeah. In so many ways, it's magic. I think that if I was going to stay anywhere in Brazil long term, it'd be around these parts.
Okay. I want to visit Ubatuba.
Ubatuba.
Just the fact that there is a place called Ubatuba on the planet.
And it's got great surf at Ubatuba. Yeah, they call it Ubachuva because chuva means rain in Portuguese, because it rains a lot there. But with rainforest, you get the rain.
Mm.
So if I were going to spend a lot of time in Brazil, the place I'd go is I'd head north, and I'd go to Salvador da Bahia, which is a fantastic city. Tim, you've been there, haven't you?
I have, yeah. And I think the whole of Bahia is very special. It's got this beautiful mix between African and Portuguese culture, and plus all these other cultures as well.
But because so Salvador used to be the capital of Brazil, and it's where all the slaves came in. So it is still so African. You arrive there and the people actually look different and the food is different and the music is different, and it's got its own vibe and its own energy.
Its own energy, it's its own religion in a way. It's a place that's taken on a lot of kind of parts of these various African religions. There's voodoo there, and it's like this really kind of African Brazilian vibe, and it's so colorful and it's so vibrant. I remember going to a church in Salvador da Bahia, and it was just like African drums and people sambaing and dancing into this church, and it was just so wonderful and vibrant and fantastic. I absolutely loved it.
And I love the way this religion is really part of everyday life. And I have a friend who runs a big company there, and he would show me, like, we were driving down a street and I sort of clocked that on the corner of the crossroads there were a couple of bottles and a cigarette pack, and I thought, you know, a couple of Deras had had a party. He's like, did you see that? I'm going, yeah. And that's an offering to Eshu, who's the god of the crossroads. And I went, is anyone can touch that? He was like looking at me going, no, that's issues. And he had a big, tough head of security who was ex-army, who wore the little white beads of, I forget which god has the white beads. But, he just had those on.
Goddess of the sea, Imanja. Like, it's a big part of life over there, and especially in the north.
And beautiful old colonial architecture, great beaches. And the first time I went to the Maca place, and, you know, I sort of make up Portuguese, you know, I sort of say Spanish with an accent.
Some shishas in there.
Yeah, a bit of mumbling and it gets you by. And they were setting up stalls in the Maca place, and I was like, is there a party tonight? You know, and the guy was going, yeah, it's the Festival of San Antonio. And I went, Festival of San Antonio, July 17 or whatever the day was. No, Festival of San Antonio, Thursday. And it is. Every Thursday there's this huge party that the whole town just goes out and...
Every night is a party.
I've heard that the carnival there is supposed to be and quite different from the Rio, you know, the more famous one in Rio, like the different dances. They don't really have the samba parade thing, but it's a whole legit sort of more authentic experience. I would love to go to that
one day. It's wild. There are karaoke. Someone who lives in Rio said to me, he said, if you go to Salvador to carnival and you have a boyfriend, you come back, you don't have a boyfriend or girlfriend, whichever way, it's all in.
Yeah.
I've been in Brazil for carnival and I haven't been to carnival. because I wasn't allowed to go to Cairo. I'm not joking. I was literally locked in the apartment and my girlfriend was like, you're not going.
Your girlfriend was like, this is not going
to
end
well. I was not allowed to go.
Too dangerous. Yeah.
All right. So we have somewhere like Brazil with an amazing culture and amazing cities. But South America is also known for its natural wonders. And Tim, you're putting in a vote for the Amazon.
Yeah. So my experience in the Amazon, I've been twice, both very different experiences.
Okay, Amazon covers a big part of the yeah. country. Where did you go?
So I've been to the Brazilian Amazon out of Manaus, and then I've been to the Amazon in Peru, so out of Iquitos. The time I was in Peru, I was filming for the Peru Tourism Board, so we had this nice, big, luxurious boat, and we had all the frills and had our own little cabin. My experience in Manaus was very different. I was traveling in Brazil with a friend of mine. We wanted to go to the Amazon. We didn't know how we were going to go to the Amazon, but we just got a flight into Manaus. So we basically walked through the streets of Manaus looking for someone to take us into the jungle. And we found this guy and he offered us a very competitive price. And we just jumped in a dugout canoe with him one day and headed off with some hammocks and machetes and canned food and spent 2 weeks camping in the jungle. Wow. And it was an amazing experience. It was just wild. We stayed with the locals. We saw the pink dolphins. We were fishing for our own food. And it was just a wonderful experience. But wild. But I wouldn't suggest everyone goes and just follows a stranger into the jungle.
So if you don't want to take the Tim Sciroti method of exploring the Amazon, Rob, you've done it differently, haven't you?
I have, yes. So I've done it from Peru and also from Ecuador. And I, potentially because the Ecuadorian one was my first one, I think the first time that you go to the Amazon or, you know, anywhere as visceral as that is the one that you remember. And so that for me was just a whole new world. Like to be in somewhere that vibrant, like that, with that amount of life. I remember doing spending a sunrise at the top of this sort of water tower where you go up to the top and watching the sunrise and essentially watching the Amazon wake up, and that cacophony of noise that comes from all these different birds and noises you've just never heard before, like, you know, stuff that you've calls and things that you've never come across. It was incredible. I mean, it is. The Amazon can be hard work. It is steamy. It is humid. There's lots of bugs and stuff around.
Mosquitoes
can go nuts. And so it's not necessarily an easy place. Even if you're staying in really nice places, when you're out and about in the Amazon, it's not necessarily always the most comfortable and you've got to have bug spray and sun cream on. But it's unlike anywhere else I've been in the world. And I would go back in a heartbeat. I would definitely
do it
again.
Worth the discomforts for sure.
Absolutely.
Oh, see, I've got to say, I mean, I love ecosystems and wildlife and stuff, but yeah, I find jungles really, Amazon in particular, really hard work, which is why my sort of, if I had to pick a natural wonder in South America, I'd go down to Patagonia. So somewhere like Torres del Paine National Park, which is these amazing icy landscapes, and you can sit on a beach with this birch forest that is only about, you know, a metre high because the conditions are so harsh, and you can have that in your back and you can watch the glaciers floating down the channels in front of you, and you can go and trudge through waist-deep snow if you must, which I chose not to do. Hard to believe, I know. and you know, there's very little noise, no nasty things keeping you awake at night. So I just think it's stunning. Tim, I think you've been there, haven't you?
I have, yeah. We just heard about this park. This was quite a while ago, and we just heard about this beautiful walk. And I think now it's a lot more regimented. You know, you have to organize like basically a permit to go in there each day, and you've got to book ahead. But we just went in there and we walked through the gates and started walking. We spent 4 days living inside the national park there and just camping on the side of the river and walking, and it was just absolutely stunning. I don't think I've ever seen such beautiful mountains at that point in time.
It is totally gorgeous. And I think the trick to Patagonia is, so the first time I went in winter, and that was amazing because no one goes in winter. And it's actually, you know, we were there, it was 10 degrees, it wasn't that bad at all. And there was just no one around. Apparently in summer these days, it's like you're walking in lockstep with a bunch of other people. But it's like most places, if you choose your season, you can go and have a great experience. Now, Rob, you mentioned Ecuador before, which is a bit of an underrated country. And I know that there's a couple of the little hidden gems that you're fond of. Colombia is another one too.
Definitely, yeah. And actually, just to hark back to Patagonia for 1 second, my favorite like outdoorsy trip I've done was a rafting trip in northern Patagonia on the Futaleufú River. And so if people have done like the Grand Canyon and a couple of other rafting trips, it's called the Futaleufú.
We're going from Uber to Uber to Futaleufú.
They sound like made up names, don't they? And it's like a 6-day rafting rafting trip on this mouthwash Blue River that goes down through the Andes. You can't get to most of those places without, you know, going rafting. It's extreme, like it's got a mile of class 5 rapids at the end, but it is like it's the seminal rafting trip I've ever done. It was just incredible. And that's And getting back to the sort of the scenery aspect of that variety that you get in South America is sort of unrivaled, that you can have, even within Patagonia, that you have those different experiences just in different parts of that place was great. But yeah, back to Ecuador. I loved Ecuador. And I didn't really realize that the Amazon went into Ecuador as it does into Bolivia and Colombia and all those different countries. And it's got an extraordinary diversity. Again, quite a small country, much easier to navigate than some of those larger South American countries. And it has the Galapagos as well, which is an obvious sort of draw card. And I think people tend to go to Ecuador because of the Galapagos and forget about some of the other regions that they can go to. And so, I had a great time. And because that was my first Amazon experience, I think that's the one that's always going to stand out as being the most memorable.
Few destinations inspire passion like South America does. And a small group adventure with Intrepid Travel is your all-access pass to this exciting part of the world. Accompanied by a local leader to show you the best secret spots, you can relax at a homestay on the shore of Lake Titicaca, enjoy a traditional asado experience in Buenos Aires, or hike through the mighty Amazon jungle. It's time to start planning your next unmissable adventure at intrepidtravel.com/South America.
So, Tim, another underrated region that you're fond of is Argentina, but for you it's not so much Buenos Aires, right?
No. I mean, Buenos Aires, I think, it's a lovely city. It's got its charm. It feels very Italian and very European in many ways. But I really enjoy the countryside when you start traveling west, like when you go out past Cordoba and over to Mendoza and El Bariloche and these kind of places. I mean, this is just the land of Parrillas, the asado barbecues, red wine, and just living well. It's just a beautiful place and lovely countryside. And once you get out of the major kind of cities and the major touristy areas of, I hitchhiked around there. So we're going into little towns and staying with local families and whatever. And it just felt like a really authentic Argentinian experience. But there was just, in many places, pure gluttony. Just like eating and drinking way too much. For me, that's a good travel experience.
And the scenery in places like Bariloche is pretty spectacular. Stunning, yeah. As well.
Absolutely beautiful, yeah. We did a thing where we went out on a boat and we went fishing for trout, and we caught like 5 of these massive trout. And so we just had this huge barbecue on the side of the lake and just cooked all this trout and had this huge feast, and just surrounded by these beautiful snow-capped mountains. And I don't know, you just can't really beat that in my book.
It's one of the things I find lovely about South America is, you know, we all know there's wildlife in the jungle, but there's odd creatures everywhere. And this is your trout story made me think of it. So in Patagonia, you've got the vicuña, which are like the llamas and have these ridiculously long eyelashes. In Bolivia, which I reckon is one of the hugely underrated destinations with amazing desert landscapes. And people know about the salt flats at Uyuni, but there's so much else. And you've got lakes that are, you've got mineral lakes that one of them is a virulent red, one of them is a virulent green, one of them sort of a milky jade color. I mean, they're just stunning. And they've got these loopy rabbit-like things. At the moment, the name escapes me, but they're pretty big, and you'll just see them perched on top of rocks. And it's like, what is that? And how have I never seen that before in my life? And that's so many of the places you can visit in South America have these hidden secrets.
Absolutely.
As well.
Totally. And the other thing, a place I'd put a vote in for, going back to Brazil, is that everyone obviously knows about the Amazon in Brazil, but there's another area called the Pantanal in Brazil, which is the world's largest wetlands, which I had never heard of before I went there, which is extraordinary that you can have the world's largest of anything that you sort of haven't heard of. And it's quite hard to get to, and it's mostly privately owned, so you have to go sort of between haciendas, so it's not quite as easy to get around. And it's sort of swampy for half the year, so it's quite a short season. But the wildlife they have in there is bizarre. They have these capybaras, which are these like enormous sort of guinea pigs style things. The most memorable thing were giant otters. I'd never seen giant river otters before, which, I mean, we think of otters as these really cute little things that lie on their back and, you know, and sort of preen themselves. These things are like sort of aquatic leopards. They are muscly and enormous, and they're quite ominous. And they duck in and out of the water like water polo players. It was really, we came across a group and they're quite rare. And that was mesmerizing just to watch them sort of feeding and larking around. They've got giant anteaters, giant armadillos.
Yeah, like a healthy population of leopards. I mean,
jaguars. Yeah, also, particularly in the northern part of it. Yeah. We were in the southern part. And so we didn't see them, unfortunately. But yeah, in the northern part, I've heard they're quite, it's quite easy to spot. And caimans, which is like a sort of a form of alligator sort of crocodile. And again, that just this extraordinary landscape, which is enormous and quite accessible from, you know, Rio, São Paulo. It's not that difficult to get to, but with a whole cast of characters that you just can't see anywhere else in the world.
And it is the thing with the Pantanal. The people who know about it, they're obsessed with jaguars, you know. But as you say, there's so much else to go and see. And those crystal clear streams where you can just snorkel and see absolutely everything that's happening.
Amazing. And the bird life, I mean, I'm not particularly into birds, but the guy that we had really was. And once you have someone who's enthusiastic about that stuff and they point it out to you, you sort of, it's infectious, that enthusiasm, and you start catching on. And if you're into birding, then Pantanal is one of the, you know, primary birding destinations in South America.
What about ancient ruins? I mean, the Incan ruins in Peru, your Machu Picchu, your Cusco are well known. But there's so much else. There's a city just outside La Paz, Tiahuanacu, that was built by the predecessors of the Incans. And that's just, no one goes there. And it's got these amazing monumental temples and stuff. Even just in Brazil, the old colonial towns just have this majesty about them and aren't that visited. And do either of you have special places?
There's an area in Peru called Amazonas, which is sort of north Peru near the border with Ecuador. And that's got a lot of ruins from the Chachapoyas culture, which was the culture that came before the Incas. And so you can go to a place called Cuelap, which used to be quite difficult to get to. And then I think in 2016, they put a cable car in there. So the access has become a lot better. And that's South America's largest stone ruins. I think it was from like 500 AD, so it was before the Incas came along. Used to house 5,000 people. It's sort of like intact. We were the only people there when we were there. It just doesn't get anywhere near as much visitation as, say, Machu Picchu does. And Peru's got a bunch of those things that people just need to like know about.
People don't know about. I remember I got asked to go on a trip to northern Peru, and I was like, northern Peru, so what's on the itinerary? And they went, well, you can go to the ancient Chimú city of Chan Chan. And I was like, ain't heard of Chimú, ain't heard of Chan Chan. I mean, you know. Yeah. And we actually had great guides who were archaeologists and were telling this long story of how there's a particular culture that was known mainly for its pottery. And, you know, on the pottery they used to depict these who they thought were fabled characters with particular headpieces and jewellery and whatever. And then one day someone just dug up some grave and in the middle of nowhere in northern Peru was like, weird headdresses and jewelry. And so, you know, on the chat room for archaeologists interested in Peru, they kind of went, does anyone know about a red headdress and a jewelry? And so, you know, the pottery people and the grave people got together and went, oh my God, this is this culture and this is what happens. So
I'm not surprised that there is a pottery people and a grave people.
Everyone's a specialist these days.
It's an interesting online forum, isn't it?
I'm a grave person. I got mine in the local pub.
Yeah, I think we all know that too. So is there anywhere in South America that you guys aren't in love with?
São Paulo.
Skyscrapers and traffic jams, not a great combination.
Yeah. But it's got its charm, like anywhere.
It's got fabulous restaurants.
It's got fabulous restaurants. And we used to go and watch on Sundays a thing called Samba de Velo, which is Samba of the Candle. And they would light a candle and they would basically play samba music and dance samba until that candle burnt down. So this could go for, you know, 10 hours, you never know. And that's a little kind of cultural thing in São Paulo, which is fantastic. So I love the people there. But in terms of city, it is big. It's quite dangerous. Mm-hmm. I mean, driving around São Paulo, you never stop at red lights at nighttime. Like driving in our local area, I had to like drive and sort of slow down halfway down the street if there was a red light and then put the windows up, lock the doors and slowly approach the lights. And if it was still red, you just go straight through. It's the kind of life that it is there, but it has its charms.
I think in a way there's that trade-off a bit with all of those South American cities. Even in Lima, I'm not a massive fan of Lima. The traffic there is equally hellish. It's got this incredible food scene. I mean, what you get when you get a whole bunch of people together is that sort of creative stuff, but then you get a whole bunch of logistical issues that come with, you know, not always the best organized sort of infrastructure. So I struggled with Lima. And yet, if you're a foodie, Lima is like the place to go to.
Amazing food.
Yeah. And so I guess you sort of put up with some of the other things in order to get that. Even Bogota in Colombia, just another big sprawling city, like Medellin and Cartagena are much nicer cities. You sort of have to go through Bogota. It's like a necessary evil to access the rest of Santiago. I'm not in love with Santiago. I'd much rather go to lots of other places in Chile. So I think it's a bit of a common complaint, maybe.
I think sometimes these kind of big, bad, landlocked cities, because they don't have the natural beauty of, say, Rio or whatever to fall back on, they get forced to really work on their own culture. So there's areas of São Paulo that are some of the coolest places out of any cities I've ever been to. A place called Vila Madalena. Which is fantastic, and it's got this amazing vibe and incredible art and food and culture and music. So that kind of springs up in cities like that. But you're right, it's a trade-off, you know.
And it's really, sometimes you need to do your research and dig a bit deep and see what there actually is there.
Yeah.
All right, so people who are going to South America for the first time, what tips can you share that will help make the trip easier?
My biggest tip to anyone traveling to South America is learn a little bit of the local language, whether it's Portuguese or Spanish or French or wherever. It's going to change your entire experience, and you will be surprised how few people speak English once you start to get off the traveler's trail a little bit. Brazil, in the main tourist areas, they'll speak a little bit of English, but really it's just the people that want to get money out of you. You want to meet locals, you need to speak a little bit of the local language, even if it's just enough to be polite. If it's just sort of like please, thank you, just enough to make them think that you're kind of coming to their side a little bit, and sort of not just going out there and just speaking English to them, because it comes across as rude. So if you just kind of speak a little bit of the local language, know how to count to 10, order a beer, get a room for the night, that's going to change your experience entirely.
Yeah, I would back that up 100%. I'd done a fair few trips to South America, and I've learned a little bit of Spanish, and it's totally changed my experience compared to the first time that I went there. And it just shows that you're willing to be a bit vulnerable, and as you say, like it's like an olive branch to people, and they'll meet you. If you've got to be sort of take that first step. The other thing I'd recommend is learning to dance. So everyone loves dancing in South America, and it's a very tactile society. And if you just become a little bit comfortable with that, then and you learn a handful of salsa steps, then I ended up in this random salsa club in Cartagena in Colombia. I was the only like gringo in there. My girlfriend at the time was Colombian, and so she was sort of helping me through it. But it was one of the best nights of my life, of my experience in Colombia, because I felt I was really part of that local culture. And sure, I was the worst dancer in the room by far, but it was still fun, and people really appreciated you know, sort of making that effort. So bit of Spanish, learn a salsa, you can't go wrong.
Phrase book and dancing shoes and your set.
Yeah, definitely, yes.
Rob, Tim, thanks so much, guys, for coming in today.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. If you'd like to follow Tim Shirodi on his adventures through South America and beyond, check out his Instagram. And if you're interested in what Rob and I have been up to, you can read our latest stories at travelit.com.au. If you'd like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. And don't forget to rate and review the podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Flight of Fancy.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Sign up to the Intrepid e-newsletter for more travel inspiration and to be the first to hear about great deals and competitions. Visit intrepidtravel.com to subscribe today.
Flight of Fancy is hosted by Ben Groundwater. Our guest host is Uta Juncker. This podcast is produced by me, Annie Dang. Audio production by Lap Fam. Extra audio assistance by Dave McMillan and Leah Samaglu. And our digital editor at traveler.com.au is Craig Platt.